Hello and welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. We're going to get kicked off with a must list here. We have a couple articles with reviews. There's one piece from, I think, our Reality Rewind issue that we'll be able to get to, and something from Grey's Anatomy, because they've just had their 20th year anniversary. That's a good collection of articles. So let's start with the must list. Survival of the Thickest, Seth Rogen led the studio, and we had a world top this week's must list. A restoration of Lucio Fulci's classic and a debut novel by Dr. Jonathan P. Higgins round out our picks for the weekend. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. I can still vividly recall piling onto the couch with my roommates to watch the premiere of this new show called Grey's Anatomy. Hard to believe that that was 20 years ago, as of yesterday, or that we weren't injured by the mental springs practically protruding out of that hideous yellow sofa. I digress. The point is, it's been two decades of Grey's and Shondaland, something Entertainment Weekly celebrates this week with a package of exclusive features. From a series of couples interviews, including Katherine Heigl and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, to a preview of Bridgerton Season 4, we've got all the Shondaland hits represented. Come dance it out with us! That's Patrick Gomez, Editor-in-Chief. The first item on the must list is Survival of the Thickest. Michelle Buteau's Netflix sitcom is funnier than ever in season two. Their love lives are hilariously messy, but the show's core trio remains hashtag friendship goals, navigating life obstacles together while constantly hyping each other up. Buteau's Mavis may have her flaws, but her curvaceousness is, refreshingly, never depicted as one for any of her sexual admirers. Standout episodes see the besties trip out with Anderson.Pack at Afropunk and shine a light on trans joy with Peppermint. The comedy is pro-black, pro-fat, pro-queer, pro-sex, and pro-bad-boss-bitch, and we love it for that. The Studio is next. This Apple TV Plus cringe com follows newly installed studio exec Matt Remick, played by Seth Rogen, who needs to make blockbusters, think Kool-Aid, the movie, but yearns to make art. Co-starring Catherine O'Hara, Ike Barinholtz, and Catherine Hahn, and packed with A-list cameos, this is a ruthlessly funny satire by and for movie junkies. Next, we have a book, Black Fat Femme. Black Fat Femme podcast host Dr. Jonathan P. Higgins takes readers to school in their honest and hilarious debut novel. In using their own journey through the gender spectrum, they not only uplift queer Black voices in media, but educate and inspire. We Had a World is next. Joshua Harmon's splendid memory play is now appearing in the cozy confines of the New York City Center. Heart, humor, and hurt combine in the playwright's played by Andrew Barth Feldman's real-life tale of growing up caught in the crossfire between his traumatized mother, played by Jeannie Seralis, and an eccentric and alcoholic grandmother, played by a sublime Joanna Gleason. And our last item on the list, Don't Torture a Duckling. Inveterate boutique label Arrow Video has added a sparkling new gem to its collection, a 4K restoration of Lucio Fulci's magnum opus, featuring new audio commentary, essays, interviews with Giallo icons Barbara Boucher and Florina Bulkin, and more. That's our must list. Survival of the Thickest, Seth Logan led the studio, and We Had a World top this week's must list. and it's by the Entertainment Weekly staff. Next, let's take a look at this movie review, Warfare. Joseph Quinn and Will Poulter suffer the horrors of combat, but to what end? In gut-wrenching detail, directors Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza recreate a real-life skirmish the latter survived in Iraq. This is by Jordan Hoffman. They won't be showing this one at recruitment centers. Warfare, out April 11th, is a remarkable cinematic achievement operating at a profoundly compelling level. It's also an incredibly unpleasant affair, and when it was over, it left me thinking, well, what the hell was that all about? If you can respect a movie but also dislike it, this is one such example. The story is so simple that it is practically abstract. A group of Navy SEALs are maneuvering in Iraq in 2006. They requisition a private house, a polite term for barging in and shoving the civilians in a back bedroom before drilling the walls, then use the position to surveil a nearby marketplace. Men with guns start to congregate. Any minute now, things are going to go south. It's agonizing to watch because you know bloodshed is right around the corner, yet when it finally comes, it still takes you by surprise. Before the screening, I pinged a friend who had already seen the film. Are there a lot of guys writhing in agony holding their entrails? Yes. Okay, I'll close my eyes. That won't stop the horrific screams. And this is the meat, so to speak, of Warfare. Most of the movie is set in real time, waiting for a rescue squad to collect wounded men for desperately needed medical repairs. Joseph Quinn, the terrific British actor from A Quiet Place Day One and Gladiator II, and our next Johnny Storm for Fantastic Four First Steps, spends the bulk of this picture squirming in torment, emitting ear-splitting noises from deep within the pits of hell. One wonders how much warm salt water he gargled with between takes. Anyone who isn't a bona fide sociopath will find this depiction, and several others, of physical and psychological torture to be deeply disturbing. One might even think, maybe we should have seen Minecraft instead? Warfare is co-written and co-directed by Alex Garland, who brought us last year's Civil War. His partner is Ray Mendoza, a former Navy SEAL who worked as a consultant on the Kirsten Dunn-led picture. The incident depicted in the movie is one that Mendoza lived through. DeFaro Wunate plays a younger version of him, and he is essentially the lead character in this ensemble piece that defiantly refuses to give anyone much of a backstory. What you see on the actors' faces is what you get. Others in the cast include Will Poulter, Michael Gandolfini, and Taylor John Smith. In that regard, and others, Warfare is more of an art installation than a typical movie. Its You Are There mission statement is spelled out in the press notes I glanced at on my train ride home as I tried to wash images of men turned into spaghetti and howls of, "Oh my God!" out of my mind. This is a reminder to people who make the decisions to go to war that there are people that will answer that call so others don't have to. It's not a new sentiment. One can find it from Tolstoy to Black Sabbath, but it is one that certainly bears repeating. That the specific task at hand in Warfare is so vague is a good reminder that though this happened 20 years ago, there are people right now who have been ordered to enforce political will with violence, and this savagery will likely repeat for all time. In that regard, I suppose this is a noble endeavor. But then again, is it really? What is to be gained by rubbing our faces in brutality like this? Isn't there enough trouble in the world? I watched warfare so I could report on it for you. I don't see why anyone would volunteer for such a thing. Earlier, I wrote that the film is more of an art project than a typical movie, but there is a little epilogue at the end that does make it typical and also kneecaps some of its view-from-nowhere credibility. A mid-credits coda takes images of the real survivors from this incident and juxtaposes them with the actors. The spectacular Cosmo Jarvis, the yelling guy from Shogun, is seen goofing around with the real Navy SEAL he portrays, and they challenge one another to an arm wrestle. I think it's fine that everyone got to meet, and maybe bonding like this aided Jarvis in his performance, which is very good. But including this as a happy ending is, to me, a big misstep. Not only does it shatter the illusion that the movie painstakingly creates, but the entire production comes out from behind the curtain, so to speak, to slap our boys on the shoulder and say, "Good job." Part of what made Civil War such a winner was its refusal to comment on the film's actions. Warfare ultimately takes a different approach and is a far less noteworthy statement as a result. That's the review of Warfare. Joseph Quinn and Will Poulter suffer the horrors of combat, but to what end? It was by Jordan Huffman, who's giving the movie a B-. That review sounded worse than B- to me. Next is a TV review, Dying for Sex, a heartbreaking and horny comedy about love and loss. And I'll add a quick disclaimer here that this article is a little more graphic than what we usually get from Entertainment Weekly. Michelle Williams and Jenny Slate star in Hulu's cancer comedy based on a 2020 podcast. This is by Kristen Baldwin. Molly, played by Michelle Williams, is in couples therapy with her husband Steve, played by Jade Duplass. Their sex life has been dormant for years when she gets a call from her doctor's office. Her breast cancer is back, and now it's stage 4. With the phone still to her ear, Molly is confronted with a vision of herself at 7 years old, played by Annabelle Toomey. The little girl is dancing around the room in a pink ballet leotard and jeering at her adult counterpart. As Molly recounts later to her best friend, Nikki, played by Jenny Slate, "She knew what I'd done with my life, and she was mad about it." That anger at herself, at cancer, at the man who molested her when she was 7, spurs Molly to devote her remaining days to a single, as yet unfulfilled goal: having an orgasm with a partner. It's a premise that's ripe with dark and dirty comedy potential, but this limited series from Kim Rosenstock from Glow and Elizabeth Merriweather from New Girl has more on its mind than just raunch. Inspired by the true story of Molly Kocan and the titular podcast she hosted with Nikki Boyer, Dying for Sex is a heartbreaking and, at times, very horny story about female friendship, self-actualization, and the realization that it's never too late to heal. After the call from Dr. Pankowitz, that's played by Succession's David Reich, Molly takes immediate action. She leaves Steve, moves in with Nikki, and joins a dating app. As the reality of her prognosis sets in, chemo and drugs to trigger early menopause will give her 5 years at best, Molly greets the avalanche of penis pics in her inbox and the men who sent them as a welcome distraction. Cancer is her tormentor, but also her liberator. She no longer has time for self-consciousness as she hustles through hookup after hookup, searching for whatever it is that turns her on. "You're going to be dead in less than 5 years. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters," she tells herself while ogling a hot guy in a hotel elevator. Talk to him. As its title suggests, the 8-episode series, premiering April 4th on Hulu, does not skimp on the sexcapades. In her quest for erotic satisfaction, Molly attends a quote-unquote play party, gets to know a man, played by Conrad Riccamora, who likes to wear a dog costume and act like her pet, and embarks on a humiliation-based, dominant and submissive relationship with her neighbor, played by Rob Delaney. Sometimes the writers lean a little too hard on the sitcom-y wackiness of these sexcapades. Molly doesn't know how to unlock a cock cage, LOL, which saps a lot of comedy from the cringe. But Molly's sex quest, as Steve calls it, often intersects with her medical care in provocative ways. During one appointment, Molly asks Dr. Pankowitz if there's anything she can do to help with her vaginal dryness. Shifting uncomfortably, the doctor asks Molly's palliative care counselor, Sonia, played by Esco Duley, to field that question because it's a mental health issue. Annoyed, Nikki interrupts, "How is having a dry vagina a mental health issue?" Molly is not just a cancer patient, she's a female cancer patient who's reliant on the male-dominated healthcare industry. Her goal, achieving that elusive orgasm, is Molly's way of taking charge of her life, and ultimately her death. Dying for sex is at its most effective when it allows the subtext of Molly's desires to take center stage. Having been robbed of control by the man who molested her as a child, adult Molly finds herself drawn to topping, being the dominant partner in a dom-sub relationship. Hoping to get some pointers from G, played by Robbie Hoffman, a top she met through Sonia, Molly instead gets a lesson in the importance and power of her own vulnerability. It may sound strange, this scene, in which G and Molly engage in some gentle BDSM in the stockroom of a home goods store, was one of the most moving things I've watched all year. Much as the real-life Molly and Nikki did in their 2020 podcast, Dying for Sex combats the bleakness of Molly's prognosis with gallows humor. "You look so nice! If you're dying, why are you effing weirdly vibing right now?" demands a tearful Nikki, like glowing from within. Slate, who is fast becoming Hollywood's go-to for effortlessly funny, fierce, loyal best friend roles, provides much of Dying's comic relief. Whether Nikki is apologizing for an outburst in the hospital, "I won't grab my butt at any other doctor's," or acting out clueless in its entirety to entertain a bedridden Molly. The actress also brings an affecting weight to Nikki's own transformation from BFF to beloved full-time caretaker, a role that is as sacred as it is sacrificial. The superb cast helps Dying for Sex overcome its jokier excesses. Julie is warm, grounded, and dryly funny as Sonia, and Raish brings a befuddled sweetness to Dr. Pankowitz. Delaney manages neighbor guy's evolution from boorish slob to kind-hearted lover with ease, and Hoffman radiates a cool charisma as G. Sissy Spacek is predictably wonderful as Molly's mother Gail, whose guilt over her daughter's molestation led to a years-long estrangement. A special shout-out to casting directors Jeannie Bacharach and Jessica Daniels, who pack the ensemble with standouts down to the smallest role. Paula Pell as an incongruously chipper hospice nurse, Margaret Cho as Molly's cancer support group buddy, Zach Robidas as the cock cage aficionado. Williams doesn't have a lot of comedy on her resume, and she isn't the obvious choice to play the sardonic, slightly chaotic Molly. But Molly's humor, much of which is communicated through inner monologue voiceover, is steeped in anger, pain, and grief, all of which Williams commands with the mastery of a 5-time Oscar nominee. When the inevitable comes for Molly, pun intended, It is devastating and beautiful. With only 8 half-hour episodes, Dying for Sex is a quick, I hesitate to say easy, binge. At the risk of being sent to TV critic jail, I'll admit I wanted the episodes to be a little bit longer to allow the series' many thoughtful themes more room to breathe. Even in a smaller package, though, Dying for Sex has the tools to leave you satisfied and completely emotionally spent. Dying for Sex premieres Friday, April 4th on Hulu, and Kristen Baldwin is giving the show a grade of B+. We heard that Grey's Anatomy is turning 20, and I have the article right here. See the many residents of Seattle Grace Hospital then and now. Here's an update on Ellen Pompeo, Patrick Dempsey, and more of the medical drama's stars. This is by Chris Snellgrove and Kevin Jacobson. Since its premiere on ABC on March 27, 2005, Grey's Anatomy has become a true institution. The long-running series has kept diehard fans hooked for 20 years, with creator Shonda Rhimes perfecting the formula for a delicious doctor drama featuring hot hookups, compelling cases of the week, and shocking deaths. Rhimes and Company's secret weapon has been their knack for casting. Starting with Ellen Pompeo, Patrick Dempsey, and the other OG cast members of the mid-2000s all the way through to today, Grey's Anatomy has consistently featured phenomenally talented ensembles, some of which have gone on to thriving careers. In honor of the series' 20th anniversary, let's revisit some of the most notable Grey's Anatomy cast members, delving into their careers before, during, and after their involvement with the show. There are 17 here. This is going to take up the bulk of the rest of the show of this episode. The first is Ellen Pompeo, who plays Dr. Meredith Grey. Ellen Pompeo started her television career on shows like Law and Order, Strangers with Candy, and Friends. She also demonstrated her big screen chops in the movies Moonlight Mile from 2002 and Daredevil in 2003, but the small screen made her a household name. That's all thanks to Grey's Anatomy, where she plays the titular character, Dr. Meredith Grey. I have the best relationship with pretty much all of the original cast, Pompeo told InStyle's Ladies First podcast in 2021. Not everybody, but I really stay in touch with a lot of them, and we just have the best time. I just love them. There's like a deep affection I have for that original cast because we went through something that only a few people can relate to. Pompeo has been part of Grey's Anatomy since its start in 2005. For a while, it looked like she might never cease her full-time commitment to the show. She began appearing in fewer episodes starting in season 19, though she still regularly provides her signature voiceover narration. Pompeo attracted media attention in 2021 after telling Patrick Dempsey on her podcast, Tell Me with Ellen Pompeo, about a spat she had with Denzel Washington on set. Washington, who directed the season 12 episode The Sound of Silence, allegedly took issue with Pompeo improvising certain lines, leading her to angrily reply, Listen, mother effer, this is my show. This is my set. Who are you telling? She was later met with media scrutiny over her attitude toward Washington. Pompeo is taking on her first new live-action role since she began Grey's Anatomy with the 2025 Hulu limited series Good American Family. She continues to serve as an executive producer on Grey's Anatomy. The actor married music producer Chris Ivory in 2007. They have 3 children together. Our next actor is Patrick Dempsey, who plays Dr. Derek Shepherd. Patrick Dempsey already had a reputation as a dreamboat thanks to films like Can't Buy Me Love from 1987 and Sweet Home Alabama for 2002 by the time he joined Grey's Anatomy in 2005. Neurosurgeon Derek Shepherd is affectionately dubbed McDreamy, and that nickname has stuck to the actor well past his official departure from the series in 2015. Fans will always remember when his character was shockingly killed off in season 11. In a 2015 interview with Entertainment Weekly, the actor discussed how he felt about retiring that role that catapulted him to stardom. "I knew it would be heavy like that. I didn't realize until we did our interview that it was really over," he said. "It started to dawn on me that this is coming to an end, which is why I think I was so moved by it. It was the first time I really stepped back and was starting to witness and to reflect on what had happened." That didn't stop writers from bringing McDreamy back in flashbacks and dream sequences, though, notably appearing in Meredith's visions while on a ventilator in season 17. Dempsey has since starred in movies like Bridget Jones's Baby in 2016, Eli Roth's Thanksgiving in 2023, and Ferrari in 2023. Longtime fans also enjoyed his turn in Disney's Disenchanted in 2022, reprising his role from Enchanted in 2007. When he's not in front of the camera, Dempsey is quite fond of auto racing and has competed in many series. He's also well known for his philanthropic work, namely founding the Patrick Dempsey Center at Central Maine Medical Center in 2008 during his now-deceased mother's bouts with cancer. As for his personal life, Dempsey was married to his former manager and acting coach, Rochelle "Rocky" Parker, from 1987 to 1994. He later married Gillian Fink in 1999, with whom he shares three children. The couple nearly divorced in 2015, but they reconciled the following year. Sandra Oh is our number three, and she played Dr. Christina Yang. Sandra Oh had previously starred on the HBO series Arliss and appeared in films like Under the Tuscan Sun from 2003 and Sideways from 2004. She soon became one of TV's most familiar faces as Christina Yang, a surgical intern whose drive and ambition eventually made her a cardiothoracic surgical fellow. Oh played the hard worker and fierce friend of Meredith Grey for 10 seasons. Even after Oh left Grey's Anatomy in 2014, fans still wondered if she would ever return. "It's so funny. Every year, it's like I hear that I'm coming back to the show," she told Entertainment Weekly in 2018. "But what I realize is, in a way that I'm really pleased and grateful for, is that the show is continuing on with its life and that the show and the people who are still attached to the show are still attached to Christina. It means a lot to me." O's most prominent project since then is the hit spy series Killing Eve, on which she played the titular character and served as an executive producer. The role earned her a second Golden Globe in 2015, having previously won Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Series for Grey's Anatomy in 2005. She also racked up a whopping 11 Emmy nominations between the two shows. Oh won her first Emmy in 2024 as one of the producers on Best Television Movie winner Quiz Lady, in which she also starred. She's done substantial voice work as well, notably for Pixar's Turning Red in 2022, Netflix's She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, and the Amazon Prime animated series Invincible. Oh was previously married to her Sideways director Alexander Payne from 2003 to 2006. Those are the top three of 17. I'm going to take a quick break here to say that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly magazine, and I am reading from their website, which is EW.com. Our number four actor from Grey's Anatomy is Katherine Heigl, who played Dr. Izzy Stevens. Katherine Heigl had an eclectic early career, appearing in movies like Under Siege 2, Dark Territory from 1995, and Bride of Chucky from 1998 before starring on Roswell. She started with the original Grey's Anatomy cast in 2005 as Dr. Izzy Stevens. She spliced her tenure on the medical drama with rom-com roles in Knocked Up in 2007 and 27 Dresses in 2008, but Grey's took up most of her time. That hard work paid off, however, when she won an Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series in 2007. Somewhat notoriously, the actress withdrew her name from awards consideration in 2008, explaining in a statement, "I did not feel I was given the material in season 4 to warrant an Emmy nomination, and in an effort to maintain the integrity of the Academy organization." This led to a public perception that Heigl was a diva. She left the series shortly thereafter in season 6 and later expressed regrets about the ordeal. "I'm disappointed in myself for allowing that perception to exist," she told Entertainment Weekly in 2010. "There's nothing more gross than the idea of somebody in my position being ungrateful, and I hope that in the coming years I can change people's minds about that. The 6 years she spent on Grey's Anatomy were important years, and I don't want them to be demeaned." After leaving Grey's Anatomy behind, Heigl appeared in movies like One for the Money in 2012 and played Samantha Wheeler in the last two seasons of Suits. She also starred on and produced Netflix's Firefly Lane. She'll soon star in the musical film That's Amore opposite John Travolta. Heigl married singer Josh Kelly in 2007 and they share 3 children. Heigl has received awards for her activism surrounding adoption, animal welfare, and cancer awareness. Next, we have Justin Chambers, who played Dr. Alex Karev. A former Calvin Klein and Armani model, Justin Chambers got his start on screen in 1995 with the soap opera Another World, before appearing in movies like The Wedding Planner and The Musketeer. But his acting career didn't truly take off until he was cast on Grey's Anatomy as Dr. Alex Karev, who starts as a surgical intern before becoming a resident and later a pediatric surgeon. Chambers played the role for 14 years, which is no small feat. When Entertainment Weekly asked why he returned for season 13, the actor put it simply, "It's a job. I like having a job. I like the people I work with. My boss is awesome. It's great. Why not? I've got nowhere better to be. This is where I'm supposed to be, and I'm enjoying it." Eventually, Chambers did have somewhere better to be. After leaving Grey's Anatomy in 2020, he portrayed Marlon Brando in the Paramount Plus miniseries The Offer, and appeared in an episode of the Fox anthology series Accused in 2024. He's been married to former model agency booker Keisha Chambers since 1993, and they have 5 children together. T.R. Knight is next. He played Dr. George O'Malley. T.R. Knight's breakout role was playing Dr. George O'Malley on Grey's Anatomy, and he even received an Emmy nomination for his performance in 2007. The actor walked away from the show and a lucrative contract after 5 seasons for a number of reasons. According to him, most issues boiled down to strained communication with showrunner Shonda Rhimes and an uncertainty about his character's future, in addition to coming out as gay. "There just comes a time when it's so clear that moving on is the best decision," Knight told Entertainment Weekly in 2009. "There are a lot of people who would like to be in my position, but in the end, I need to be fulfilled in my work." He's since played notable public figures such as J. Edgar Hoover on Genius, Einstein, and Reese Priebus on The Comey Rule, in addition to co-starring on The Flight Attendant alongside Kaley Cuoco. Knight has been married to dancer Patrick B. Leahy since 2013. Chandra Wilson is next. She plays Dr. Miranda Bailey. After making an impressive stage debut in the early 90s, Chandra Wilson landed minor screen parts like her turn in Philadelphia in 1993, but her breakout role was playing Dr. Miranda Bailey on Grey's Anatomy, beginning the show as a general surgery resident who works her way up the hospital ladder. Wilson also climbed high in the acting world, earning 4 Emmy nominations for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series between 2006 and 2009. Despite these impressive accomplishments, she would still worry about her character getting killed off and how that might impact her career. It's not even anxiety, it's just the reality of what we do. I never get so comfortable that I ever forget that, Wilson told Entertainment Weekly in 2010. What we do as actors is really about decisions that get made in rooms with desks. And people change their minds all the time about things. So you make the most of it and you learn as much as you can. Wilson continues to star in Grey's Anatomy. Her character also appeared in 2 episodes of Private Practice in 2009 and 24 episodes of Station 19 from 2018 to 2024. She has 3 children with her longtime partner. Wilson became the spokesperson for the Cyclic Vomiting Syndrome Association after her daughter Sasha was diagnosed with the disease in 2010 and even directed a Grey's Anatomy episode showcasing the condition. That's Season 9's Second Opinion. She is also an advocate for treating substance abuse and mental health disorders. Next, we have James Pickens Jr., who plays Dr. Richard Weber. Before coming to Grey's Anatomy in 2005, James Pickens Jr. played Chuck Mitchell on Roseanne and Deputy Director Alvin Kirsch on The X-Files. However, he's still best known for playing Dr. Richard Weber, who begins the show as the chief of surgery at Seattle Grace Mercy West Hospital. The veteran actor has faced many creative challenges over the years, though Dr. Weber's arc in which he grapples with alcoholism hit especially close to home. My dad struggled with alcoholism toward the end of his life, so I got to watch him struggle and he battled it valiantly, Pickens told Entertainment Weekly in 2020. I think the thing that I was most proud of was the fact that storyline helped me to understand what that day-to-day struggle was like. He continued, I had quite a few people come up to me in the past who were recovering, and they said how much that storyline really helped them work through some of the things themselves, but also recognize that this is an issue that is quite common. The actor continues to star in Grey's Anatomy, though he found the time to reprise his Chuck Mitchell role for the 2018 Roseanne reboot and its spinoff, The Conners. Pickens Jr. is married to former Musique member Gina Taylor, with whom he shares 2 children. He was inducted into the National Multicultural Western Heritage Museum in 2019, for his impressive cultural contributions to TV and film. Isaiah Washington is next. He's number 9. He plays Dr. Preston Burke. Before he signed on to Grey's Anatomy, Isaiah Washington appeared in Spike Lee's Crooklyn, Clockers, Girl 6, and Get on the Bus. As Dr. Preston Burke, a cardiothoracic surgeon who enters a tumultuous relationship with Christina, Washington was one of the key cast members of the first 3 seasons. His contract was not renewed at the end of season 3, following revelations of him using a homophobic slur to refer to co-star T.R. Knight. Post-Grey's Washington appeared in various films and made a handful of TV appearances before starring as Thelonious Ja in The 100 from 2014 to 2018. Washington has been married to his wife, Denisa Garland, since 1996, and they have 3 children together. Kate Walsh played Dr. Addison Montgomery. Before joining the Grey's Anatomy cast, Kate Walsh was known for her recurring role as Nikki on The Drew Carey Show. She began starring on the medical drama in 2005 as neonatal surgeon Dr. Addison Montgomery. The actress soon got her own spinoff in 2007 with Private Practice, following Addison after she leaves Seattle Grace Hospital for a co-op wellness clinic in Los Angeles. That runaway success might have surprised some actors, but not Walsh. She told People in 2021 that she had a premonition that Grey's Anatomy was destined for greatness. "Sometimes I do feel like I get a little witchy about things," she said. "I was like, this is a great show, even before it even had an airtime. And here we are 7 years later. It definitely changed my life." In many ways, Addison was a character that Walsh just couldn't quit. She stopped appearing regularly on Grey's Anatomy after season 3, though she still returned for occasional episodes. After Private Practice ended in 2013, she was able to focus on other projects. In 2021, she officially rejoined Grey's cast as a guest starring role. Walsh was married to Alex Young until 2010. She's currently engaged to Andrew Nixon, whom she met on an exciting expedition to the Antarctic. Sarah Ramirez played Dr. Callie Torres. Before coming to Grey's Anatomy in 2006, Sarah Ramirez was primarily known for their stage work, notably winning the 2005 Tony Award for Best Featured Actress in a Musical for Spamalot. They followed this success with an 11-season stint as Dr. Callie Torres, an orthopedic resident turned attending surgeon. Ramirez, who is bisexual and came out as non-binary in 2020, had pitched making Callie bisexual to showrunner Shonda Rhimes. Dr. Torres thus became an early marker of queer representation on primetime television. "Being part of the Shondaland family was one of the greatest honors of my life, one of the greatest privileges," Ramirez told People in 2021. "It taught me so much, portraying a character that a lot of folks had not seen on TV, including myself. I will always have a soft, tender place in my heart for that work and that role. It was the role of a lifetime." After leaving Grey's Anatomy in 2016, Ramirez played a political strategist, Kat Sandoval, on Madam Secretary, and Che Diaz on And Just Like That. They also lent their voice to Disney's Sophia the First from 2012 to 2018. Eric Dane played Dr. Mark Sloan. Before coming to Grey's Anatomy in season 2, Eric Dane was known to genre fans as Jason Dean from the witchy teen drama Charmed. But he soon became well acquainted with wider audiences as Dr. Mark Sloan, a handsome plastic surgeon and frenemy of McDreamy, who is likewise dubbed McSteamy. Dane left Grey's Anatomy in 2012 to focus on other projects, including playing Tom Chandler on TNT's The Last Ship. "I loved doing Grey's Anatomy. I would have done it until the final episode, but this was something I couldn't pass up." Dane is married to actress Rebecca Greyhart, and they have 2 children together. Chyler Lee played Dr. Lexi Gray. Chyler Lee's breakout film was the 2001 comedy Not Another Teen Movie, followed by the ill-fated spin-off That 80s Show. She soon stepped into more dramatic territory by joining the Grey's Anatomy cast in season 3 as Meredith Grey's half-sister Lexi, a surgical intern who eventually becomes a surgical resident. She also has a dizzying relationship with Eric Dane's Mark Sloan throughout her tenure. Lee stayed on Grey's Anatomy until that infamous plane crash episode in season 8, though she briefly reprised her role for one of Meredith's dream sequences while on a ventilator due to COVID-19 in season 17. The actress's biggest role post-Grey's has been playing Alex Danvers on the CW drama Supergirl. As the titular heroine's sister, she also appeared in other Arrowverse shows like Legends of Tomorrow and The Flash. Lee has been married to Nathan West since 2002, and they have 3 children together. Kevin McKidd played Dr. Owen Hunt. Kevin McKidd's first major role was playing Danny in Trainspotting in 1996. He then took on historical shows like the miniseries Anna Karenina and the period drama Rome, but Grey's Anatomy has been his biggest project to date. He's played Dr. Owen Hunt, a trauma surgeon who suffers from PTSD after serving in Iraq since season 5. The Scottish actor has taken on other roles during his ongoing Grey's Anatomy tenure, such as playing Poseidon in Percy Jackson and the Olympians, and voicing characters in Brave and on Star Wars Rebels, and appearing in 2024's It Ends With Us. McKidd has been married twice, and he has 2 children from each marriage. Jessica Capshaw played Dr. Arizona Robbins. Jessica Capshaw had ample acting experience before Grey's Anatomy, including a minor appearance in Minority Project and a leading role in the film The Groomsman. She was also impressive on The Practice, but it was playing Dr. Arizona Robbins, the chief of pediatric surgery on Grey's Anatomy, that won her millions of fans. Capshaw initially signed on for 3 episodes, but she stuck around for the rest of season 5 and was promoted to main cast billing the following year. Fans were surprised when Capshaw's character lost a leg, as was the actor herself. Executive producer Shonda Rhimes told me she was so excited about this story, and when she told me what it was, I think I felt about it like everyone did, which was totally shocked, she told Entertainment Weekly. It was something I had never even pondered, which was why she's the master storyteller. It took me a while to wrap my head around. Her character also made an impact on the LGBTQ+ community due to her on-screen relationship with Sarah Ramirez's Callie Torres. The actress married entrepreneur Christopher Gavigan in 2004. They have 4 children together. She's the daughter of actress Kate Capshaw and stepdaughter of director Steven Spielberg. Camilla Luddington played Dr. Josephine Jo Wilson. Camilla Luddington's career took off in 2012. In addition to roles on True Blood and Californication, she joined the Grey's Anatomy cast in season 9 as Dr. Josephine Jo Wilson. She remains on the show to this day, and it sounds like coming back each year never gets old. It isn't about keeping it interesting and new, because every single season, it's really exciting, Luddington told Entertainment Weekly in 2021. The writers always have storylines that are so surprising and change everything. There's no element of, ugh, how do I keep this interesting for myself? She continued, actually, when you sit with a character for this long, things in their life start to parallel with yours. When I started off, I was dating my now husband. Now I'm married and have children and feel more settled in my career, and Jo is excelling in her career and having kids. It's like growing with a buddy. That's the surprising part of the experience. When you sit with somebody for that long, you're so invested. When not appearing on Grey's Anatomy, Luddington has done voice work as Lara Croft in the Tomb Raider video games and even did motion capture for the character. Our number 17 of 17 is Katerina Scorsone, who plays Dr. Amelia Shepherd. Most audiences hadn't heard of Katerina Scorsone before Grey's Anatomy unless they happened to watch the Canadian shows Mr. Dress-Up or Power Play. She's starred in the medical drama since 2010 as Dr. Amelia Shepherd, who also became a partner at Oceanside Wellness Group on Private Practice. What's more, the character appeared in 5 episodes of Station 19. Scorsone was married to Rob Giles from 2009 to 2020, and they have 3 children together, one of whom has Down syndrome, which inspired the actor to become an advocate. That was Grey's Anatomy Turns 20. See the many residents of Seattle Grace Hospital then and now. It was by Chris Snellgrove and Kevin Jacobson. And to wrap up the episode this week, I have something from their Reality Rewind issue. It's kind of fun. It is the 10 best reality TV elimination lines ranked. It takes a lot to make a reality competition show work, including a memorable catchphrase for the moment contestants get sent packing. This is by Kristen Baldwin. It takes a lot of things to make a reality competition show work: an original concept, great casting, and a charismatic host. But nothing is more important than ensuring the host has a snappy and memorable catchphrase for the moment contestants get sent packing. So what makes a good elimination line? Nothing in reality TV is an exact science, but the following 10 shows earned a spot on this list by delivering exit quips that blend wit, wordplay, originality, vivid imagery, and sometimes unforgettable absurdity. Number 10 is The Tour Ends Here from Rock of Love with Bret Michaels. The second of VH1's many dating series, Rock of Love chronicled Poison frontman Bret Michaels as he searched for love with a gaggle of gorgeous groupies. Rather than handing out roses each week, Michaels gave backstage passes to the women he wanted to keep dating. Everyone else got the dreaded The Tour Ends Here brush off. Number 9, You Are Not the Biggest Loser from The Biggest Loser. This one is both hilariously obvious and brilliantly simple. In all other aspects of life, being called the biggest loser is an insult, but on this long-running weight loss competition, it was the goal. So having the host somberly announce, "Your team has decided you are not the biggest loser," was both a disappointment and somehow still a compliment. "Your time is up" was from The Flavor of Love. Get it? Because public enemy hype man and star of multiple VH1 reality series, Flavor Flav, always wears a giant clock around his neck. This is the perfect punnery, silly and to the point. "You're out" from Project Runway. 2 years before Miranda Priestly dismissed Andy with a withering "that's all," Project Runway host Heidi Klum perfected the art of the brusque goodbye on this long-running fashion design competition. If the supermodel was feeling particularly generous, she'd sometimes follow her clipped "you're out" with a poker-faced "auf Wiedersehen." Number 6, You Get the Axe from Scream Queens. VH1's horror-themed reality series, in which 10 aspiring actresses competed for the role in a Saw film, only lasted 2 seasons, but its clever elimination line continues to haunt us. Facing the bottom 2 contestants each week, the host would inform one, "You get the callback," before delivering, "You get the axe," death blow to the other. Brutal and blunt, just like Jigsaw. "Don't call us, we'll call you" from The Starlet. The 2005 WB series in which 10 young women vied for a role on One Tree Hill was harsh. The judges, casting director, and the star generally belittled and at times body-shamed the contestants before Faye Dunaway delivered Hollywood's most famous euphemism for rejection. "Don't call us, we'll call you." Number 4 is now Sashay Away, RuPaul's Drag Race. Mama Ru knows that even an eliminated queen is still a queen, so she sends Drag Race contestants home with a line that acknowledges their inherent fabulousness. Now, sashay away. Number 3, Please Pack Your Knives and Go, from Top Chef. Everything about Bravo's culinary competition is classy. The elevated cuisine, the fancy sponsors, and even the extremely polite elimination line, "Please pack your knives and go." Good manners in a reality TV show? That's groundbreaking. Number 2, Your Cab Is Here, from Double Shot at Love. On Jersey Shore, the arrival of a taxicab was a joyous occasion. On this MTV dating show, think The Bachelor, only there are 2 of them, it was a harbinger of heartbreak. That switcheroo, plus the sheer comedy of seeing these lovable Guidos deliver the news with exaggerated gravity, makes this exit line seem fresh. And the number 1 catchphrase, "The Tribe Has Spoken," from Survivor. Nearly a quarter century since host Jeff Probst first uttered the words while snuffing out Sonia Christopher's torch, the tribe has spoken remains ingrained in our pop culture lexicon. Succinct, original, and indelibly final, Survivor's catchphrase continues to thrive because it works in so many different situations, from voting someone off the island to debating with your family about pizza toppings. Three against one, no mushrooms. The tribe has spoken. That was from their Reality Rewind issue. It's the 10 best reality TV elimination lines ranked, and it was by Kristen Baldwin. That wraps us up for this week and all the time we have for Entertainment Weekly. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I am volunteer reader Diane Salisbury. I've been reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. Please come back next week to hear what stories we found. I will continue reading from the Reality Rewind issue, and I'm certain there will be interesting items from the past week. So until then, goodbye.